tape class. Because at the end of class, I'm going to tell you about podcasting, and I'm calling it podcasting. I actually don't use, I use the iPod to tape it, but I actually save it as an MP3, just for a fact that I learned WAV files are much bigger than MP3 files. So whenever I do this, I actually convert to an MP3. I'll show you all sorts of great stuff about that. And I convert it and save it on my network. So the kids can now listen to every class if they miss class. If they have the notes with them, it's great. Okay, so I grew up in the 80s. I graduated from high school in 1984, college in 1988. All I did with a computer ever in college was type papers. That was it. In the 90s, I learned about the internet, and I do remember when it was all a text-based internet, which was kind of cool. Late 90s, I started to use a computer in the math office because we had one that we all shared to write tests. And then we all shared it to go out on the internet. Bless you. But I didn't do anything. And in early, 2002, 2003, 2004, around there, a bunch of different things happened. I started to realize how these PowerPoints could make things a little bit more interesting. I needed a quicker way. Oh, I was doing trig graphing. And I know you could use that overhead. I do have this, this overhead piece. I have this. It's gonna go to my picture stand. I have this piece right here, and I had the TI-83, and it was good. But there are things on the internet for graphing something. One thing is called GCalc, gcalc.net. That is so cool and so quick and so colorful, and you can graph with it, and people and the kids love it. And it allowed me to show trigonometric trends. How many of you, do you teach trigonometric trends? Okay. You do it by hand. Even with the TI-83, it takes a while. When you start doing it in color, they got it. I was getting through 2 and 3 day lectures in one day, and they were getting it. It wasn't memorization. It wasn't me with my back turned. It was me looking at them, engaging the kids, and showing them things, and I realized, okay, you know what, I've got to try something. So, middle of the year, I started to experiment with a PowerPoint, and all of a sudden, some of my, who I would call like the kids were my biggest challenges, were like, can I have those? And I kept going, what do you want? PowerPoints. And I was like, I said, why? Because they helped me take notes. I found that kids who struggle with note-taking, kids who are auditory learners, so they concentrate and listen, miss notes. By giving them my PowerPoints, I realized, oh my gosh, I can give them my lecture, just the backbone of my lecture. It's not my entire, I don't sit down, I don't stop writing on the board, but it gives them the backbone of the lecture, and they are a little ahead of the game. And then, the next year, my school said, okay, we're gonna do websites. So slowly but surely, I started to put this all together into my website. The first year, I did just PowerPoints. I took all my lessons out of my magic notebook that I always called it, and I converted them to PowerPoints. And I will tell you, that does take a while. It takes a commitment. It takes sitting down on a Friday night or a Saturday night and committing an hour to getting into the habit of doing it. But there, with that, I will say, if you find PowerPoints on my website that you want to use, I've got calculus, I have some statistics, and I have algebra trig, like an honors. Take it, use it, adopt it, change it, it's yours. You don't even have to credit me. I'm fine with it. If you sit on a Friday night with a glass of wine and start writing PowerPoints, you're gonna start to realize it's not so bad. It's very similar in a lot of ways to Microsoft Word or Excel. It's got a lot of the same functionality. I spent that summer doing those PowerPoint presentations, and they were such a hit. Then through that year, I then did my calculus class and did their presentations. Then the school gave me the website. They put up a website for us. And I said, okay, the next year, I connected things. I connected my review sheets and my worksheets and my PowerPoints. And what I found was the kids were coming into class with the PowerPoint presentation in front of them and taking notes on it. And they were listening and they were engaged. And as I sat here with my little clicker, I turned my back on the kids much less, and we all know the minute you turn your back, they're doing something. So by keeping my eye on them, they kind of stayed with me. Then I found it, I got these kids who were really struggling, suddenly stopped struggling a little bit. Then the parents. Parents Day, when I showed them a web page that had lectures and PowerPoints and review sheets on it, they were so happy, and they thought I was awesome. So that was like a win-win. Then, the next year, I did calendars. And all I did that year was put a calendar for my class once a month up so the kids would know what I was doing and when I was doing it. I stopped having kids ever say they didn't know about a test. I stopped announcing tests. I get the really good kid who would print it out, and she would turn around and like once a month be like, oh, there's a couple tests coming up. Or the kids would talk amongst themselves. I never now hear kids say, I didn't know there was a test, because there's never an excuse. I never announce tests. I don't announce homeworks, because that same year I put the assignment sheets online. Then this year,
podcasting. It seemed hard, but one of my two favorite people in my tech department said to me, how would you feel about trying podcasting? It's like, sign me up. What do we have to do? It's easy. I'm not particularly adept at technology, but it is so easy, and the tech department is so willing to help that I'm like, this is great. And I did it all year. Now the kid who's absent can go to the calendar and look at where I was, go to the website and find the PowerPoint, read it as they listen to the audio, and now sometimes they need to come in and ask a few questions. Most of the times, if they're absent and they can look at those two things, I don't have as many kids coming in for re-lecturing. What a time saver. Now the thing is, I didn't do this overnight. I did this over time, and I think that that's one of the most important things to do when you decide to implement technology. I've kind of designed what I'm going to call 7 suggestions, not commandments. Someone very smart told me, don't command people to do anything, just give them suggestions. And the first one is, and I told my classes, just pick one thing that you think is good, one thing. Whether it be calendars, or whether it be podcasting, or PowerPoint, do that one thing, do it well, and do it for 6 to 9 months. If you try to do it all at once, you're going to be overwhelmed and you'll give up. I know I would. I would never have tried this unless I was stubborn and ignored what the tech people were throwing at me. I ignored them and did what I wanted. This is a little PSA for tech departments. These are my two favorite people, Apu and Perla, and I've been actually emailing them all week and getting my questions answered. They are my friends, and they do like cookies, don't they?
Yeah.
But the other thing about it, and I think this is very important to realize, and I'm sure I have committed the same sin, if you sit with them, you'll be amazed at the lack of respect that people in the building treat what I figure are a number of the most important people in the school. We all know things go wrong and we have glitches. We need our problems solved, and you'll be amazed people come in and scream, I need my problem solved, and I need it solved now. Lack of respect. If you treat your techs with the same respect you'd expect you treated with, I have found that they help me with everything because I'm willing to try things. I'm trying a tablet PC next year. So that's my new pilot project. Perla came to me and said, no one wants to try a tablet, will you? It's like, sign me up, I'll do it. Podcasting worked great. I'll give tablet a try, why not? They're awesome. In your building are probably a whole bunch of super users, and that's a term I've heard to describe people who really pick some good technology and use it. Ask them questions. You'll learn very quickly whether they want to help or not, but you know what? If you find someone who's willing to help, they'll be a great resource for you. Also, take notes. Yeah. If I don't listen, so when my husband tells me something, he gets very annoyed with me. It's also tough. I know I've had the situation where people have come and asked me the same question. You know when your students come in and ask you the same question over and over and they haven't taken a note? Don't you want to throttle them? And don't you want to throttle the, you don't want to be on the throttling end. So I would take the notes. When you learn something, do it immediately. That is why I suggest only pick one thing. If you're trying to do a PowerPoint and then also do the podcasting and try to get your website up, your head will spin and you won't remember how to do anything. But if you pick that one thing to do, you're going to become a pro. You're going to become the super user that other people come to within your school. And the last thing is, second last thing, don't reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I am making the correlation that if people in my building don't want to share, when I ask for it, they'll say no. So people on the internet who don't want to share, they probably won't put it out there. don't use things generally without permission or citing, but over the years, I've contacted people. A guy had a great problem-solving website, and I asked him, I emailed him, I said, do you mind if I use your notes? I'd like to link my website to them, and I'd like to use, he said, absolutely, that's why it's out there. So, like I said, my website, fair game. Anything you want on my website, take it, adopt it, adapt it, put your name on it. That's fine by me. And the last thing is, don't overlook your own ability to learn. We all see our students have those aha moments when they kind of discover something on their own. It feels really good, and we still have those moments when we suddenly figure something out. I've never gone to a PowerPoint class. I've never gone to an iPod class. I've never done it. I've just sat down and made myself sit and learn. It takes a time commitment, but if you're willing to do it and pick something small, if you get that small thing under your belt, picking the next bigger thing won't be so bad. Okay. So, this is two links to my website. This is the one thing you might want to write down. And I'll give you my email address also. I am so happy to communicate and share with people. I think that's really important. When you teach somebody something, you have to be accessible afterwards. Both of these, they just take you to the same place. And if you go to pingree.org, the Pingree School website, you can also find your way to my website. And most of my resources on there right now are geared toward an honors algebra trig class, like a 10th grade level, not a pre-cal, and AB calculus, excuse me, and statistics. And my email address is just kcassidy@pingree.org. Email me with anything. I do have a spam folder, but I check it once a week, so if it gets stuck in spam, I'll find it and definitely reply. Oh, K Cassidy, just that letter K Cassidy at Pingree, pingry.org. This is what I told the other class. Okay, so let me show you my website. And really, I do want to describe it as a work in progress. I did this. Yeah, the New York Times, I'm working on the side for them. They're like really, you know, they're pretty appreciative. Pingree starts us all off with a standard index page. And if your school does web pages, they'll probably do something similar. If your school doesn't do web pages, one of the things I'm going to talk about, that I don't think I'm going to have time here, but I'll talk about it in my class, and I'm going to post information on my website, is about blogs. Blogs are a great way to start a website. They're out there. I've seen AB Calculus blogs out there that are really good. And if you're a little daring, you can actually learn how to make a page that can be linked to the blog. At the bare minimum, you make a blog where you tell the kids, hey, this is what we're doing this week. Or you put an assignment sheet on, or something like that. Okay, so the first thing I did, I keep referencing this algebra. We call it Algebra 3 trig because most kids by this time actually have had 3 years of algebra. 7th grade, 8th grade, and then this year. So, that's where I started. And this is 4 years of work. This was not overnight. If you try to do this overnight, your social life will go right out the window. I started off by putting my lectures on. And this does, ignore the stuff that says audio, I'll get to that in a minute. This does violate one of the rules that I've always learned about PowerPoint presentation or websites. You should be able to see it on one screen. And you do have to scroll down to get to the end chapters. And I haven't figured out a good solution to that, but I also haven't worked real hard to figure out a good solution. But what my PowerPoints allowed me to do, let's go to this one. I think this is a good one. What PowerPoints allowed me to do was draw things quickly and have a conversation with my kids. And like I keep saying, not doing this anymore. That's a really important point, whatever technology you employ. You don't want the technology to take the place of your teaching, and you don't want the technology to take you away from teaching, and you don't want the technology to take you away from the students. You want that technology to make it easier for them to learn and for you to teach. If it doesn't, don't do it. Only do things that are going to make things better, not harder. So we talk about ellipses, conic sections, gave them the definition, and I write them little notes. I'll write things like, you know, what did she say, or is she right, or don't write this down. And then how nice is it? I can drew, and I made this up. It's just a picture. I drew a circle and a couple of lines and a couple of dots. And then I have, and I don't know that these two lines actually measure the same length as those two lines and as those two lines, but I tell them it does, because that's the definition. And all I'm doing is creating an animation where things pop up and pop up and pop up. And then, oh, and this is, you can link things within PowerPoints. You can link to documents. You can link to a disk. I have Audrey Weeks, if you're familiar with her. In my calculus class, I usually keep her disk in my computer. And I've linked to files on her disk and show the kids some interactive sketchpad, which I could never do myself, but I can use hers. I hope this works. Some of my links are dead. Oh, this is a good one. So this is now linked to a website. As long as you have an internet connection in your classroom, you can even link to outside websites. And this is a really great interactive that allows the kids to see how, if you move the foci further and closer, you change the shape of the ellipse. Part and parcel of the definition that the sum of the distances to the foci is a constant. Oh, you know what? You can't see that, can you? I can see it really good on my screen. I'm sorry. There, that's better. Takes me a minute to get there, show them that, have a conversation about it, get back, and I'm back in my PowerPoint. Then I can draw the picture, and I can, you know, have this step up. And some kids are writing, and sometimes I'll say, don't write anything, because I'm going to give you the whole slide at the end of class. So we can talk about how do you remember the major axis is A, the minor axis is B. We can talk while we're doing things. I'm getting myself so into my whole PowerPoint. Again, you can import equations. Use as equation editor. If you have math type or any sort of equation editor, that comes in too. And this is the page I give them during at the end of class. I say, see, you don't have to write anything down. What do we notice? What's happening? We get into a conversation. The kids tend to be a little bit more engaged. And the poor note taker is sitting there with a smile on their face because they are actually able to stay with class because they're not scrambling trying to write. The auditory learner is in seventh heaven because everything will be written down for a way to look at things, but they can truly listen. Let's see. This year I will also be teaching statistics. And so I've just started putting those PowerPoint presentations together. And the first two chapters of my book, at least, are a little dry, a lot of descriptions and stuff. So I found, I was like, oh, this is boring. I went to the internet, I found some paid pictures, and then I credited everything at the end. The one thing you need to make sure you do is cite everything. I was going to cite it on this page, but it's very messy, but I may change that. Now, I am not real good with, there may be some rules out there about using things and the internet, and I do have to look at that very carefully. But I think that just to display information for kids, especially when you cite it, trying to draw those on the board, you know, or the color, look at that color. And again, I haven't done really any hard work. All I've done is found things and cut and pasted. And like I said, at the end, I have a my page of citations. Now let me go to another page in here. Oh, I'm gonna have to just paste it. So, you know, this is still interesting for the kids. Frequency table, you can throw some color in so it's a little bit more exciting to look at. Kind of gives them some things to remember. And then I was searching, we were talking about, I was reading about stem and leaf plots and found dot plots. And there's not a lot out there on dot plots until I found a guy who was interested in evaluating his iPod playlist. And I thought this is something that the kids are gonna find kind of interesting. Because he was wondering, now I don't know what Python scripts are at all, but he figured out, he did a dot plot or he did a frequency distribution of his songs in his iPod. And then he did a dot plot with it. And I thought, that's really kind of cool. Someone, you know, they know iPods, they know what they are, and, you know, a lot of them probably wonder about their playlists and things like that. I just thought it was neat, and again, you know, I'm never going to say that, boy, me and the kids are right here, because there we're not. I'm 40, they're 18. We shouldn't be right here. We have a good relationship, but I'm not going to be their best friend. But if I can make it interesting, that I want to do. Okay, so that was what I did the first year with PowerPoint. Then the next year, let me think what I did. I started to do Excel. And assignment sheets. Probably most of us, you know, some of you may have like Moodle or something online, some sort of homework helper through a district or through your school, but we don't have that. We're a single institution, an independent school. And I used to hand out the assignment sheet once a month, or when I got really good, once a year. What I do now is tell the kids the first day of school, the assignment sheet is online, and all I did was I made an Excel spreadsheet, typed it in, cut and pasted it into my website, and there it is. Now, they know every day that if there's a lecture, there's a homework, and they have to look it up and do the homework. I don't announce homework, so that last 2 minutes of class where the kids are packing up their stuff, I'm not yelling the assignment, they know it's there. They come in and say, I didn't do the homework. I say, why? Well, I didn't know. I said, how did you not know? Was there a lecture? Is there an assignment sheet? And all of that, you know, excuses, they go out the window. They absolutely grow up and start accepting responsibility and be like, you know what, I just couldn't do it. That's fine. And again, this does take some time to do, but all I did was I had written out an assignment sheet, and you could do this in Microsoft Word too. All I did was took my assignment sheet, cut and pasted it into my webpage. This is through FrontPage. I don't know if anyone's using FrontPage out there, but that's what we were using. And they're getting rid of FrontPage. We're going to something different. Then, this was last year, my calendars. Oh, these are the best thing. Told the kids from the first day of school, check the calendar, check it every 2 weeks, because I'm not going to tell you what's on it. So the kid who is absent on 5/22 can then go back to the lectures and print out the binomial theorem lecture. And now this year that I've done podcasting, they can watch the lecture as they listen to the podcast, and they're there. They're 80% caught up, some of them 100% caught up. As I pointed out before, the really sharp kids are going to print this out and bring it with them. The real organized kids will be, they'll be like your little policemen and be like, oh, there's a test coming up, there's a test. The other thing that's really good is we have a rule at our school, you can only have 2 tests a day. If a teacher, we don't have assigned days for tests, but only 2 teachers can assign a test a day. If you get a 3rd test assigned, you don't have to take it. Well, so we're supposed to move it. You know they're going to be people, I'm flexible about moving. There are teachers who are uncomfortable with that. So if my kids come in and go, you know, Miss Cassie, we all have a chemistry test on the 15th, and it's actually really big, like, that's fine, let's move it to the 16th. Done. Because they've told me ahead of time, I haven't planned my schedule, you know, they're telling me a week ahead of time, plenty of time to move things around. I don't have a problem doing that. The other thing I do, and this is just a personal thing, I never review test on sequential days ever. I review and then test at minimum 3 days later, usually a week later. I call them buffer days. I figure in the real world, we're always doing things and then continuing to do other things while we have these commitments. I tell them, you know, you might as well learn, get used to learning and testing as you learn, you know, getting used to the overlap. So again, they can see this is then the kid is like, okay, review day. I know I'm confused about a certain topic. I can't go Thursday because I've got a game, and Monday I have orchestra, so Friday I'm going to have to go see her. And in class, usually on Wednesday, let's say, can I see you on Friday afternoon? Absolutely, not a problem. And this is all I did last year. All I did was calendar. Just made sure I kept it up to date. And let's see. One of the things you can also do with the Excel is, you know, give them a project, and you don't have to teach them Excel. I did an infinite series project where I gave them sort of free reign, and the kids wrote their own Excel spreadsheets. I had never expected to get 20 out of my 32 kids writing their own Excel spreadsheets. So they learn faster than we do. I have some internet links out here, Dr. Math and College Board. One year, I had kids each fill out an index card about, you know, if you were reminding someone studying for the final, don't forget this, what would you tell them? I took it all, I typed it up, and I put it on the internet, put it on my thing. This was 4 years ago, bless you. Now, this year's kids, they found it. I didn't even tell them about them. And so when they were studying for the midterm, a whole bunch of them had it with them as they were doing the review sheet and studying. It gives them more of a chance to succeed. And I think that's the important thing. Whenever we're teaching, we want to give the kids every opportunity to succeed, to find their own way, not to do it for them, but to help them do it. And you're going to just reach a lot more kids if you are able to employ some of this technology. And again, this isn't handing them technology, or this, I'm not really doing a lot of, you know, teaching things. I'm just showing you ways to change, or, you know, maybe alter how you teach. So this year I did podcasts. And I started about here. I've been having problems with it load up right here. So if it doesn't load up quick enough, I've got some on the hard drive. But essentially all you need is an iPod. The older iPods work. And then Belkin and Griffin, if you internet search iPod microphone, you'll find tons of things. Belkin and Griffin are two names I see a lot, and I believe Griffin is sold at the Apple store. It's this little piece right here. It plugs in, and when you plug in, it just says, it suddenly pops up voice memo. It knows you want to record. You press start, you press stop, and then you've got the class recorded.
What's it called again?
This one is called a Belkin. What I have, I'll show you this. I have a whole sheet explaining the podcasting on my website. But this is, there's a Griffin iTalk and there's a Belkin TuneTalk. Belkin TuneTalk. They're about $60 at most. And you plug it into the iPod, and that's really all you need. The Belkin comes with this cute little plastic stand, which falls every now and again. So. Now, this classroom's a little bigger than the room I teach. The room I teach probably goes to about the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth row. But I can be standing this far away in my classroom and it hears me. Now, I project my voice. It doesn't always hear the kids, but that's okay. I don't necessarily want what the kids all say to be heard. What the kids are really listening for is for what the discussion was and the concepts. So this, on my website, I'll show you where this is. There's this whole explanation. I have to fix one thing on it. But it's back here on Exeter 2007. These are, and again, I'm going to do a little bit more talking about the podcasting right now. But in my class, those are some PowerPoint hints if you want to try writing PowerPoints. I'll be putting up Excel hints and blog hints this week. And what you do with the podcasting, this was one of the funnest things. Again, I'm not really all that adept. But what I did was I start with the WAV file. And when you, after you record it, it saves it. And it saves it, and you'll see it'll name it. Like the last one I did was named 6:26:12:30 or 11:45. It stamps it by the name of the time and date you recorded it. It loads right back into your iTunes. All you have to do is go in and find it and drag it to your desktop. If you have anyone who's, I don't want to tell you where it necessarily is because on people's computers they're in different places, but you go in and you find it and you can't miss it, and it's a pretty big WAV file. You drag it onto your desktop, and this is what I did last night. And then you can use a couple of different programs. One is this little thing called a free MP3 WMA converter. And again, I have a link to this in that document that I'm going to post. And you can convert using this. And this works perfectly well. You drag it in, you tell it to convert, and it pops it right back on your desktop. I'm actually going to show you, though, this program, because I learned this last night. And this is so much fun. And I told the other people, I said, I could work at Abbey Road Studio after this one. Watch this. So I go File, and I find my file. Again, it's got to be on your desktop. If you try to get it from the inside of your iTunes, you won't be able to find it. And this one was one, it comes in as a WAV file. Remember, WAV files are huge. And I'll play you a little. Your pride has to go out the window. Let's see.
Okay, so if I write my song.
Because you gotta listen to yourself. And it's like, oh, do I really sound like that?
Is the inverse a function?
You can hear the background noise, that's the kids making noise and stuff.
I rewrite it and
this is a class,
right,
whatever.
Can
you see those dead spaces?
Correct.
What are dead spaces when you're teaching? Hopefully. Kids are doing problems, right?
Try that one.
Try that. So the kids are doing a problem. And some of those clicks, someone drops something here. And then you can hear some scratch from me writing on the board. And there are reasons to leave that stuff in there, because when the kids are doing the work in their bedroom, they need that time to work on it just like your class worked on it. But if you're worried about time, what you can do, let me stop this, is you pick that spot, and I happen to know that's all chalk scratchings. And in, just like in Microsoft Word, Control X cuts things, and in PowerPoint, Control X cuts things, and in Excel, Control X cuts things, Control X cuts that. Get rid of the dead space. Oh my God, so I go here, and I click here, and I listened to this last night, this is all dead space, Control X, it's gone, I got a smaller file. And then I take that tiny little file, which is still a wave, and I can export it as an MP3. Who will appreciate that? Probably your technology department. I know that they thoroughly appreciate that I keep mine nice and small. So it converts it to an MP3, and I just save it. Yes, I did that earlier today. Whenever I get these things, I tend to go, okay, because I typically figure they're leading you pretty safely. And okay, importing it takes a couple of seconds. It's a little slower than it was at lunch. And now, I have my little MP3, where did I put it? Where'd it go? Oh, I lost it. Anyway, okay, technology problems happen. It went somewhere. Oh, do you see it? Oh, there it is, yay! There it is, there's my little MP3. Now, what I typically do at this point is I actually get rid of the WAV file and watch what happens. Oh, it didn't do it. Last night it kept telling me, too big. When you throw WAV files away, it won't even fit in your recycle bin sometimes, because a half hour lecture is very big. So then, I've got this, and all I do, link it back to my website. Now, this is not hard. This is actually pretty easy. It just takes, though, having someone help you with it, you know, your tech department or something. What I'd like to do is, since I actually spoke a lot faster this time than I did the first time around, I want to see if anybody has any questions about anything you'd like to see or anything you didn't see.
Talk about doing one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I teach three different classes. Would I do that one thing for all three, or would I do just
one? I suggest one thing for all three.
Okay.
Because you know what? If the minute you start doing it for the one class, you're going to be able, especially a calendar, you're going to be able to cut and paste a lot of that stuff in. It also just gets you, it keeps you moving. And when you see your kids get excited about it, it's going to keep you moving. And again, if you do one thing for three classes, it will take longer. You know, it just takes you longer to get through all that.
You do have to have an iPod, though.
You do have to have an iPod. That is the one thing. If your school supports it, like I said, if you start showing your school, look at what colleges and universities are doing, and I think I could do this. They bought me this one. My last one, I was using my own, and I'm going to just stop the lecture right now.